Welcome to Film Fragments, a podcast where we take fragments of an actor, director, and genre and tell you our favorites from their catalog. My name is Brian Suffield. I'm your host, and I'm very excited to welcome you guys to this week's episode of Film Fragments, where today we're going to be talking about our favorite film starring Jack Black. The Super Mario Brothers movie hits theaters this week, so I thought it'd be a perfect opportunity to talk about the career of this wonderful, energetic, wild man who we all grew up loving, and I cannot wait to delve into his films, and I'm super excited to welcome today's guests. So, he is a Staten Island movie critic. He is a devourer of food, and he's also claimed to be a certified Spidey boy. It's John Mafio, aka Mothman Jones. John, how are you? Welcome to the show.
Thanks for the awesome introduction, Brian. I do have my certificate for the Spidey boy part. It's hidden in my closet. I'm not going to be able to find it. Might take a little while. Might take the whole podcast to find it, but I can tell you I'm certified. But yeah, I'm happy to be here. This is awesome. I can't wait to talk about Jack Black. He is one of those guys where, like, yeah, like, he was just in my childhood. He was in a bunch of stuff. He's just been in a lot of movies that I feel like I forgot that he was in, but, like, for, like, childhood speaking, like, a lot of good movies. And, yeah, he has this wild, chaotic energy, and I can't wait to talk about more about his roles where he uses that energy and also maybe where he doesn't use that energy.
Exactly.
Maybe actually race convention for what you expect from him.
Absolutely. I cannot wait to delve into his films. But before we get into talking about his films, I like to throw a curveball question at the start of these episodes. So you have the opportunity to take one Jack Black character out to dinner, where it's with your family, friends, or just yourself. Which character would it be and why?
Huh. Okay. You know what? That is a curveball for sure. I'm trying to think of what would be the most, like, what would create the most conversation, because he has a lot of good characters. From top of mind, I think of Kung Fu Panda, but I'm not going to bring a panda into a restaurant. First of all, they won't let you do that. He's an animal. I think I'm going to go with his character from High Fidelity, because I just remember watching that movie and just being so interested in, like, how knowledgeable he is of the music scene. And he just seems like a stand-up guy with John Cusack, just kind of like giving him the lowdown of what's going on in his personal situation with his exes. I just think it would be funny, in a way, to like have Jack Black as that character be with me for dinner, because like he would just kind of like soothe you into conversation about like an album from a band or a singer that like probably people haven't thought about in years. Just like he'll pull out a random vinyl and be like, "This is the record from Fleetwood Mac that came out in 1972 into that," and he'd be like, "Oh, cool, let's talk about music." But like, I think it's mainly because I don't really talk about it much, but I am a big music guy, and seeing that movie really opened up to me. Like, I'm like, wow, like, he really knows a lot. So I would love just to pick his brain while he's there with my family and friends.
Yeah, that's a great pick. I love that answer. And, you know, funny enough, I'm going off a person who's very knowledgeable with cinema. I am going to take the character of Miles from The Holiday. I was so worried you were going to pick that for some weird reason. I would be like, oh, crap, now I got to think of a second answer, which I don't have one, because that's Miles is the character that I would love to just go out to dinner with and everything. Not to spoil anything about The Holiday. It will definitely be brought up a little bit later in this episode, but he's a composer that works in the film industry. He is so knowledgeable with cinema. The sequence at Blockbuster, we'll talk about that a little bit more later, but it'd be cool going to Blockbuster with a guy like him, and then he just reenacts all the scores and songs from movies. Again, we'll talk about that a little bit more later. But he just also seems very charming and wholesome and an entertaining guy to be around for sure. And, you know, the only thing that I don't want is for him to, like, slide across my chest and go, "Boob Grace, Boob Grace." I don't want that to happen to me, but yeah, that's the character that I would pick hands down.
Get away.
Stop it. Yeah. But that's the character I would go with easily. But also, again, before we get into talking a little bit more about Jack Black, I would love to hear a little bit about your journey with film. What got you into it and why you love it so much?
Sure. I feel like it's been a long, winding road now, but all I think back to is when I've always liked movies for as long as I can remember, but the first time I saw the first Spider-Man with Sam Raimi in 2002 in theaters, I feel like the moment after that movie was over, I'm like, oh, you could do that with, like, movies? Like, that's blew my mind. And from there, I was like, all right, this is what I would love to be. This is what I want to do when I grow up. So from there, I just saw as much as I can, given what I could with, like, my allowance and blah, blah, blah. And then once I got a job and stuff, I started actually seeing movies more. And I started making videos, and that's where Mothman Jones Movie Channel came in, starting in 2012. Wow, over 10 years ago. But yeah, I went to college for film. I did all that jazz, and I've had some cool opportunities along the way, along with my day job. But there's nothing like movies, I feel like. It's Spider-Man just kind of altered my brain chemistry, where I was like, you put your mind to it. You could put out some really cool stuff and be artistic and be funny and be dramatic and be, you could do all that stuff. And I just like, when you get a movie that's like, really good, like there's nothing better than like a movie that really hits you in the face and whatever, like, and the beautiful thing about movies to me is like, you could get everything. You can get a comedy, you can get a drama, you can get a biopic, you can get a little indie movie about like nothing, but like it'll mean something to you because it's about specific things. Like, it's crazy to me how much the art form has evolved. And it's still, like, kind of really young, given, like actual art has been around for hundreds and hundreds of years. Like, movies have been around for a little over 100, like, you go way back to the late 1800s, like, 840 or something like that. But, like, there's still a lot to learn from movies, and we're still, the digital age is coming now. But, yeah, I'm just excited for what it brings. I still try to do reviews from time to time. Every year I definitely do a top 10 list because I feel like I feel obligated to do that because I want to talk about the top movies that I saw every year because there's so mm-hmm. much that comes out. And it's yeah. like, especially now between streaming and theaters, and it's like, I want to be able to tell people, like, these are movies that maybe you don't know about that, like, maybe you should. Like, I just recently watched Tetris, and I'm like, I don't think people are really going to, like, be turned on to this unless people are told, like, hey, this is actually a really good movie that, like, you might not even realize is out for free if you have Apple TV Plus.
Right.
But yeah, that's movies, man. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah, cinema, baby. Cinema. So I love that you've kept going with your journey with film, and, you know, it brought us together. I mean, it's crazy that we've been friends for 10 years now. It's crazy that we've been friends for so long. And
Facebook bros for a while.
Facebook bros, and then we saw so many movies together. We were in the same room when we saw Bones and All, which was wild. We saw No Way Home in theaters, not sitting next to each other, but we were in the same vicinity when we saw it for the first time. I remember I come out and I'm shaking. Then I see him and he's like, oh my God, I can't breathe. Yeah. Like he was
funny.
Yeah, he was gone.
How do we even talk to each other right now? I can't.
Yeah, like, how do we even comprehend everything that just happened? But to get into our topic of Jack Black, obviously, he's a very likable guy. He's one of the most likable presidents in Hollywood. Why do you think a lot of people get excited whenever they see his name attached to a project? Why do you think people love seeing him on the screen so much? And what makes you such a fan of Jack Black?
I would say, especially now, I feel like he's one of those actors where sometimes you get stardom right away. And I think sometimes what I kind of like more is when, like, you build a rapport and, like, you build, like, an audience and you build, like, this is who I am, and eventually, like, seeing that journey progress, like, he was, like, an uncredited role, and I Still Know What You Did Last Summer in the late 90s.
And that's right.
Not to talk, I don't want to spoil anything about that movie particularly, but, like, he went from there, and then he did, like, these little tiny roles. He was an Enemy of the State, the Will Smith movie, with Seth, like, I think he was with Seth Green a lot in that particular movie, Orange County, and then, like, he did, like, these little small roles that, like, ended up being very memorable. I think that's what people... That's when people really turned on to him. I think, like, you think of Anchorman. Like, he's in literally one scene. But I think that one scene is one of the best scenes in the entire movie. Like, now this is happening. He kicks the dog off the bridge. It's like, it doesn't take, like, in a smaller caliber of an actor, that wouldn't be funny. But he helps make that scene great. But then, like, I think what makes him unique is his musicality. And what he brings to a role, like, he feels like he's really knowledgeable of music and movies. And then just natural charisma. a lot of times that's really all you need to really be a big star and to like get people on your side. And he really shows that in every movie that he has. And then as like I was seeing like 2005, 2007 was like the peak of like Jack Black just being busy all the time. And that's when you started to see more three-dimensional roles from him, like their Holidays and your King Kong 2005s. You're like, oh, okay, like he actually has, he's not just this one-note charismatic, but this one-note guy. He has other things to offer. And what I really like why I wanted to talk about him on this podcast is because, like, there's nobody like Jack Black. If he ever retires, like, there'll never be anybody like him again. He is unique to who he is, and he picks roles that are Jack Black roles. Like, I even think of, like, even now, like, he's doing interesting stuff now, too. Like, he just did narration for Richard Linklater's latest movie, Apollo 10 mm-hmm. and a Half. But, mm-hmm. like, his narration in that movie, I was like, a lot of what I'm enjoying about this is his narration. The animation is beautiful, but, like, he's really selling it to me. Like,
mm-hmm.
like, this is, like, his childhood growing up during the space age. Like, it's, I was just really impressed by what he's able to do even now. And then even Kung Fu Panda, like, he's great in that role, too. And he's connecting with the kids, too, even now. Like, he's, the new generation is into him with the new Jumanji movies, the Goosebumps movies. I saw only the first one, but I liked his role as R.L. Stein in that.
Mm-hmm.
And we grew up with Shark Tale. I mean, great, great movie. Top five animated movie. I may or may not be kidding, but I'll let you decipher that. Welcome to the car wash. When we get into it more, I think it'll make more sense to people why I really love Jack Black so much, but he's the kind of guy where, like, if I wanted to get into acting, he would probably be one of the reasons why. Because, like, look what he could do with his skill set and bring to people and really elevate roles because of what he could bring to the table.
Yeah, I love Jack Black. He has this charisma that's unlike anyone else working today. I really love the wild energy that he brings to practically all of his roles. But I also do love when he is very subdued and laid back. And we're definitely going to get into some of his more serious performances in this episode for sure. But I've always loved Jack Black. I grew up loving him. School of Rock was played on loop constantly when I was a kid. And then as I got older and just seeing the trajectory of his career was just something so impressive. And I like how you brought up how he's so musically gifted. Obviously, everything he does with Tenacious D is impeccable. It's wonderful. And, you know, he's able to bring some of those skills to some of the roles that he's played, obviously School of Rock and mm-hmm. The Holiday, and then you brought up High Fidelity as well. Like, he has this massive passion for music that I love that he's able to incorporate that into some of his performances. I've always been a fan of Jack Black. Even though the films that he selects now aren't necessarily my favorite, I always get excited whenever I see him attached to a project because I know he's going to deliver. He's going to knock it out of the park. He's not going to ham it up. He's not going to phone it in. He's going to give it his all, which I really, really respect about Jack Black. And I cannot wait to talk about our favorite films from him today.
Hell yeah.
So let's get right into it. Our top five Jack Black films of all time. So, John, what is your number five Jack Black film of all time?
So I don't know if you'll be surprised or not that it's this low on the list, but I think because it's in the top five, I feel like it's an honor to have it in here. And this is also a movie that I know is one of your favorites. But for me, I only just saw this movie for the first time this Christmas that just passed. And I was like, I have to watch it. It's been on my watch list forever. Have to watch it. Just I got to get over with. Just like, and then I was like, oh, I don't want this to end. It's the holiday. This is now going to be a quintessential holiday movie for me. And a lot of that has to do. Jack Black in that movie is like, you're like Kate Winslet. Thank you, lucky stars, you met this man. Because this dude's awesome. Don't let him get away from you. but, like, if there's that, I can't quote it. I don't want to paraphrase it because I don't want to ruin it. But there's that scene where something with wind, you know what I'm talking about, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
he makes a little, like, I'm like, oh, you got game, Jack Black. You got game. I respect that. But, like, he brings that charisma to the role. But, like, then again, you're like, I feel like 2006, like, you're used to Jack Black being like, doopity doopity oopity oopity.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then in this, between another movie and in this one, I'm like, you're like, oh, So, like, if you bump to this guy on the street, like, he's just, like, he's just a dude. Like, mm-hmm. he's just another guy. And you get to know him. And, yeah, like you were saying, like, Kate Winslet and her and him going to the Blockbuster and starts talking about, like, the like this go, they're going down the aisle and he's talking about a movies to her. And then they come back and he's playing on the piano. And you're like, oh, man. Like, this dude has game. You know, I'm like, I respect your game. But, like, he... what makes Jack Black great in that role is that, yeah, like, you in that movie you have the dynamic of these four different characters who are completely different characters on their own, which is cool. Like, Nancy Meyers really brought, like, that's what she brings to the table, like, the way she brings that all together as the movie comes along. But, yeah, Jack Black really just blows you away in that because you're supposed to buy that Kate Winslet is going to fall in love with this dude. And, like, it's easy. He's super respectful. He's super. He's a good dude. He makes some mistakes. He's kind of quirky, but like, in the end, he's just a guy. And I feel like at this point in his career, Jack Black is like, he was not a cartoon, but he was like elevated. But this helped bring him down to a level where you're like, oh, so he like I was mentioning a little bit earlier, like oh, so he can do other things. And that's why I was just really impressed personally, even though another movie that's on my list, I love more, but, like, I was like, oh, okay, like, he really does have something here, like, and when he wants to bring dramatic chops, he doesn't, it's not, like, overt, like, Oscar, like, oh, like, crying, but, like, he's doing a lot here that I think people may not pick up on when you're watching it first.
Pass. Pass.
I figured that.
Yeah, I can't wait to talk about it. I can't wait to get into it. Number five for me, I feel like might be a little higher on your list. I'm going to go with Tropic Thunder, directed by Ben Stiller. Jack Black in this movie is absolutely insane. He really is insane to watch. Now, yeah. he is an actor struggling with a severe drug addiction. And he also, I remember when I saw the poster for this when I was a kid, this was way before I even saw the movie. I remember I was going to see The Dark Knight. And I saw this poster for this movie called Tropic Thunder. It was Ben Stiller, Jack Black with bleach blonde hair, and then Robert Downey Jr. with blackface. And I'm like, what is this? Like, what is this? And then I saw it was rated R, and I'm like, oh, well, I'm 10. I can't watch that. So I'll watch it when I can. Fast forward a couple years later, I checked it out. It's one of the best comedies I've ever seen. I still will say that this is my favorite film directed by Ben Stiller. I think it's the best film that he's done. The comedy here is razor sharp. It's energetic. It's fast. I love the story of how they're shooting this war film in Vietnam, and then all of a sudden they get tackled in a real war, but then they think that's just a movie, so they play along, and then these American soldiers. They're trying to come kill us and everything. I love that it embraces it, and I haven't seen this in a hot minute. It's been a long time since I've watched this movie, but I will never stop loving Tropic Thunder, and I really do love what Ben Stiller was able to bring through his direction, through the writing, and through all the performances. And obviously, Robert Downey Jr. is the standout of the movie. I mean, you can make an argument that maybe someone else is the standout of the movie, but Robert Downey Jr. is insanely good here. And I will go on the limb and say that 2008 was his best year because the first Iron Man came out, launched the MCU, basically kind of saved Robert Downey Jr.'s career. And then he did this comedy, and he knocked it out of the park, and he got a freaking Oscar nomination for it.
It's crazy.
Which comes to show that the Academy really should start recognizing more straight-up comedic performances. When they do that, that just shows that they have guts, that they're not going for just the safe Oscar-baity dramatic performances. And not that all of them are bad, because they're not, but it's nice when they nominate this high-profile studio comedy, and, I mean, my God, it's a really incredible nomination. It's one of the coolest Oscar nominations of the past 20 years, for sure. I loved Tropic Thunder, and yeah, Tom Cruise's Les Grossman, that's one of the greatest performances in a comedy I've ever seen, and Tom Cruise should have been nominated for an Oscar for that. Les Grossman is a character that I want more of. I would kill for a Les Grossman spinoff. Tom Cruise has said for years that he would love to go back to playing that character.
He has said
that. Ben Stiller says that he would love to do that as well. So, you know, Ben, when you're taking a break from shooting episodes of Severance, go direct a Les Grossman spinoff with Tom Cruise, because we really, really need that. So yeah, Tropic Thunder is my number five. Are you gonna pass, or is this not on your list?
This is not on my list, but I will agree that like Tropic Thunder, I have to watch it again. It's been like, it's, you can't rent it right now on like streaming. I have it on DVD. I just gotta put it, I just gotta put it in there. I just gotta show up. But one of the best comedies ever. It is kind of wild that it was acknowledged by the Academy. It's kind of like, it's wild to me. Like a you couldn't. I feel like you couldn't do that now.
No.
At least not the way exactly it was made from A to Z. But I love that movie so much. I quote it with my friends all the time. I love doing that scene with Lex Grossman with the phone. I don't want to. There's a lot of obscenities in that scene, so I'm not gonna quote it. But yeah, Ben Stiller, underrated director. I mean,
very underrated.
And like that would be crazy for him to go from Severance to like, let me just direct a silly comedy movie. But like, I love what he's doing. Like, and yeah, it's movies that are about like that are about movies and like about Hollywood. Like the way he satirizes like the actual business and the industry, like. Perfect. And like absolutely. It pokes fun, but it has fun too. And like right out the gate with the fake trailers, like you already know, oh, we're in for a classic here. Like you, it just hits you like a ton of bricks, like bam, like all these trailers are perfect. Sets the tone wonderfully. And then you're in for like just one of the, yeah. I didn't see that movie in theaters. I regret that I didn't. I don't know what happened at the time. I don't think people wanted to see it, like my friends at the time. I think that's why. But I'm just sad about it. I'm like, I wish I was in a packed theater watching that.
Yeah.
Because that was a great movie.
I'm hoping that one day, like, New York does, like, some retro screen of it. Like, they do all these screens of all these older movies. Yeah, the Alamo or the Metrograph or something. I would love to see Tropic Thunder on the big screen with people. That would be great. Yes. Especially the Les Grossman stuff. That would be wonderful.
That would be awesome. Oh, man,
I love that movie. I gotta pop that in again very soon. I definitely need to do that really, really soon. So now going into our number fours, what is your pick?
This is a rewatch for me, and this is a movie I did not expect to have on my list, to be honest, when we were planning this podcast out. It's a movie that I feel like people know about, but they haven't seen. I don't know how... Actually, I'm not sure how popular this movie is in Jack Black's array of films. It's Nacho Libre. I was shocked how much I really liked this movie, and I like Jack Black's role in this, as him as like this aspiring luchador wrestler. It's a Nickelodeon movie, which is kind of strange because I mentioned it in my Letterboxd review, but there's like some real, real raw sexual like tension in this movie between. Have you seen Nacho Libre?
I haven't seen it since I was a kid. It's been a long time since I've seen it.
Yeah, so like he works in a monastery, like in a church, and like. There's a nun character that shows up, played by, she was in Army of the Dead, I forget her name, Anna something, but everybody loves, like, she's, like, hot, like, ooh, and between her and Jack Black, the whole movie, you're like, just kiss already, like, what are you doing? but yeah, like, I think what makes that movie great is, so Jack Black is super physical in that movie, he's playing a wrestler, and it's all what you expect from Jack Black, but weirder. If you've seen like the weirdest of Nickelodeon's TV like animated shows, it kind of reminds me of that, and it makes sense why they picked up this movie and distributed it, because like it feels like it could be an animated movie if you just translated it to animation and be like, oh yeah, this would work like that, but like there's like some really fun. This isn't like an emotional movie. It's not a movie you sit down and you're like, damn, that really hit. Like I gotta think now. But it's just, like, super silly fun, and it just leans so hard into Jack Black's persona and Jack Black's state of mind, like, that you expect from him. And he's being physical, and he's actually doing – it looked like he was doing a lot of the wrestling stunts. I was watching very carefully, and I'm like, there's no, like, face, like, superimposing here with a stuntman or anything. Like, no, that's – he's doing these moves, and that's – I forgot to look it up, but, like, if he did, that's crazy to me. Because there is actually some really impressive wrestling going on in that movie when the wrestling sequences take place. It's also a short movie. It's 90 minutes. I love a tight 90. It might be a little over that, but like I love a tight movie that's going to be under an hour 45 and like really get you. There's a lot of actors also in that movie. It's beautifully shot. I guess Nacho Libre might be underrated, but I would recommend a watch if for anybody out there, including you, Brian, if you haven't seen it in a while, because it actually is, I think it's worth a rewatch for Jack Black.
Yeah, it's been so long since I've seen it. I can't even tell you the last time that I checked out this movie, but I always found it interesting that the guys who made Napoleon Dynamite went from making that to this. I always found it very interesting that they went from that to this. Two very quirky movies that, you know, were somehow rated PG, but weren't necessarily for kids. I find that very, very interesting. But, I mean, as a kid, I remember loving this movie. I can't tell you if I'll love it now as an adult. I might. I have no idea. But, yeah, I doubt that anyone did the stunts for Jack Black. I'm sure he did all of them himself. He probably wanted to go all out and do them himself. He probably wanted to be like Tom Cruise and do all the stunts himself. So it would have only made sense. But, yeah, it is weird that Nickelodeon produced this movie. I totally forgot that they were behind this because, you know, you think of Nickelodeon, you think of, like, obviously all the shows adapted from their shows. But, like, there was a period where they were producing, like, non-Nickelodeon. Like, they produced Lemony Snicket with Jim Carrey. They also produced that.
That's a dark movie, too.
Yeah, that's
the subject matter, yeah.
Yeah, that's not exactly the most kid-friendly movie out there. And, yeah, I definitely need to rewatch Nacho Libre. And now we're going to talk about another movie for families. Well, this is definitely more for families than Nacho Libre is. My number four is Kung Fu Panda. I love all these movies so much. I still love them to this day as an adult. You know how when you watch a movie when you're a kid and you love it so much that when you go back to it as an adult, you're like, ugh, no, this kind of sucks. Like, you know that feeling?
Not a good feeling.
Not a good feeling at all. But Kung Fu Panda still holds up for me. Still love it to this day. And again, 2008, great year for Jack Black with this and Tropic Thunder, like two bangers that came out in the summer. Mm-hmm. I think that this was a character really tailor-made for Jack Black. You know how you watch an animated movie and then you hear certain voices and you're like, I cannot picture anyone else in this role besides this actor. I don't think I could have pictured anyone but Jack Black voicing Poe.
No,
I think that was the pitch-perfect casting right there. And that was when DreamWorks was really at the top of their game. Like, they were pumping out great movie after great movie. Like, obviously, they had Shrek on their heels, and they had Shark Tale, I guess. And they had Madagascar and Over the Hedge and a few other movies. Wallace and Gromit. But I have always loved Kung Fu Panda. When I was a younger kid, I did karate for almost 10 years. I did martial arts for a long time. And I remember going to watch this movie, and it was just really cool seeing a movie that was very martial arts-esque and a nice homage to the Kung Fu movies, the classic Kung Fu movies and everything. But yeah, Jack Black as Poe, like, it's a great underdog story. You know exactly where it's going to go. It's not the most unpredictable movie out there, but you care about the characters. You like where things are going. You're engrossed by the story. You're entertained. The comedy hits all the time. Like, there's not a single ounce of fat to be found through the jokes, through the pacing, through anything. The animation is stunning. I love the entire ensemble here. Like, literally, I think everybody is perfectly cast in this movie. I mean, you not only do you have Jack Black, but you also have the likes of Dustin Hoffman, Angelina Jolie, Seth Rogen, Lucy Liu, David Cross, Ian McShane, great voice as the villain Tai Lung. Tai Lane, again, this is another one that I haven't seen in so long, but the entire ensemble is amazing. Like, there's not a single James Hahn, legend, of course. You know, I thought about that recently when Everything Everywhere took home all the awards, and I was like, oh man, that's Mr. Payne, Poe's father. I completely forgot he was even in those movies. But yeah, Kung Fu Panda, it's really great. And the final fight between Poe and Tai, great stuff. And just also, there's certain moments where Poe does these facial expressions and they just stay on his face when he's doing them. And for some reason, it cracks me up every time. Like, during the final fight where he, like, gets Tai Lung to fly in the air after he goes towards his belly, and then he's just looking up. He's like the funny faces with his lips are just so great. And I know that's obviously not Jack Black doing the face, but I cannot even imagine what it was like being in the recording booth for this movie. And if you were surrounded by Jack Black and he went all out and everything, like, I just can't imagine. God, great movie. One of the best mainstream anime movies of the past 20 years. this was nominated for the Oscar for Anime Feature. It was up against Bolt and the film that took home the award, WALL-E.
Yeah.
WALL-E isn't top five Pixar for me like it is for everybody else. I do really like WALL-E a lot. It's great. I definitely appreciate it a lot more now than I did when I was a kid. But if this had won, this would have been a very, very cool winner, in my opinion. But I'm very happy that a film like WALL-E took home the award. I really love Kung Fu Panda. The second one, I think, is even better than this. But I chose the first one because it's the one that kicked it off. And I really enjoyed the third one as well. They're making a fourth one right now. We'll talk a little more about it later when we talk about the upcoming Jack Black films. But, yeah, I love this series so much. It's one of DreamWorks' best series. It's one that has stayed consistent throughout. I love it so much. So Kung Fu Panda is my number four. Are you going to pass, or is this not on your list?
This is also not on my list, but I can echo everything you said. I haven't seen this movie in a hot minute either, but the DreamWorks, after Shrek 3, I think that was 2007, which is an okay movie. I don't think it's great. So I don't think it's bad.
Yeah.
But this was, I think they started like really hitting the stride after this. Like they did this and they did How to Train Your Dragon, like I think 2 years later after this. And DreamWorks is now, I feel like they're coming back into their bag with Puss in Boots 3 or Puss in Boots 2. Puss in Boots 2.
Yeah.
and hopefully they're going to be a big competitor again in the animated race. But yeah, Kung Fu Panda is like made for Jack Black. Like everybody in this movie is really good. The animation is just superb. Like, and I think like it caters to both kids and adults. I think it works on all levels. It fires on all cylinders. And it's one of those anime movies I don't think people, like, when you think of, like, top animation, I don't think maybe people don't go directly to this as, like, one of their top, but, like, it should be there because it has everything you want from the animated medium. Like, it just, like, it works on that level. Like, I agree with everything you said.
Absolutely. And, you know, for a while, this was the movie that made me dread long sets of stairs for a really long period of time until I saw John Wick 4, where now I really cannot look at long sets of stairs ever again the same way. So it's this and John Wick 4 that make me traumatized by long sets of stairs.
You go to Philadelphia, you go see the Rocky steps, and you're like,
oh my
god. Nah, I'm good. I'll just walk.
No, no, I'm good. I'll just, I'm good. So, now going into our number threes, what is your pick?
So, this is one of my favorite Jack Black roles because of, I mentioned a little earlier, like, kind of, 2006 was a big year for him. The year before that was also, I feel like the end of 2005 was a big year for him. And if people already know what I'm about to say, King Kong 2005 is near and dear to my heart. I've seen this, like, I saw this in theaters. It blew my mind. I was like, I've only seen the first King Kong, like, once when I was younger. But, like, I remember coming off of Lord of the Rings. I was so excited to watch this. I was like, oh, great. Like, he's making a King Kong movie? Yeah. It's over 3 hours long. I think my parents didn't care for it being that long. But I was in for it. And, like, James Newton Howard's score is, like, James Newton Howard, like, that dude, like, I forget sometimes, like, the music he's done. His music is so integral to that movie. There are so many like individual pieces of music in that like I love so much. I think it really helps me have an appreciation for it because when those notes hit in certain scenes, like when King Kong and Naomi Watts are like just like in like the ice rink in Central Park, when they're up on the Empire State Building, like the music, it swells and it hits. Like I'm getting emotional thinking about it. I'm like, wow, like that's movie making right there. But like circling back to Jack Black, like you wouldn't expect him to be in a role like this, I don't think, even though he does have a little bit of the Jack Black isms in there. Like you could see like he kind of like integrated like what he's known for in there a little bit. But it's really different for him. I think what fascinates me about him in this movie is that like he is like on like a dramatic journey a little bit in this. Like he's trying to get this movie made. Like that's like the story of the movie. Like he's the director trying to get the movie done. And he's kind of going to get fired by the studio, but he's like, screw it, I'm going to go make the movie anyway. I'm going to get on this boat, and I'm going to, like, be a little slimy slime ball and take some shortcuts. And, like, it gets a lot of people killed. But I think seeing his journey in that movie, like, the consequences of his actions through that entire movie, like, I think it gives the movie more a nice, like, weight. Because, like, a lot of this is his fault. A lot of what happens in this movie is his fault, and you kind of... he kind of doesn't realize the weight of his actions for a while, or arguably like ever. You could make the argument, I think, but like he really has some great moments in this movie. Like when he starts fighting the bugs, like he has like that little switch in him when that one guy dies. Like, oh, like we're fighting for our lives now, and I am angry. Towards the very end, when like he gets the opportunity to be like the big studio guy, like I got the eighth wonder of the world here, like taking pictures of the cameras, and Adrian Brody's like, you son of a bitch, how can you do this? And he has the last line of the movie, like Beauty killed the beast, which I feel like walking out of the theater, you're like, damn, like he really sells that line. And I think in a lesser actor's shoes, you wouldn't, like, that line could come off silly. But Jack Black, I was shocked. I'm like, yeah, like, he sells it. Like, but yeah, overall, King Kong 2005, I think, which might sound crazy to some people, I think it might be my favorite King Kong iteration, to be honest. Might be a little bit long. I don't mind it, though. I love all the world building. I love the way Peter Jackson tells the story. I love all the actors in it. Like, everybody in this movie is great. Everybody. And I'm like, you get Jamie Bell's in here, Adrian Brody, Naomi Watts is great, like, with, and like Andy Serkis, obviously, with the mocap. But like, he even has, like, he's also in the movie as himself, playing the chef. And like, he has some, like, everybody has, like, some really cool moments in this. The set design, the aesthetics of Skull Island are just like, I don't, like, everything is like top notch. And that's just Peter Jackson. When Peter Jackson is just like, he's in it, he hasn't made a lot of movies in the past, like, in the 21st century, but, like, when, I would love for him to go back to, like, a regular feature instead of making documentaries, even though I love what he's been doing with his documentaries, but I would love for him to go back to, like, making just a straight-up feature movie, because, like, he really, when you give him the time and pre-production and all that, he really delivers, man. Like, King Kong is one of my favorites.
Yeah, this almost made my list. This is right outside my top five. I do love the 2005 King Kong as well. I will go on a limb and also agree with you saying that it's my favorite King Kong iteration. Yeah. To be fair, though, the only other one that I had seen other than this is Kong Skull Island, which I hated so much. I really did not like that movie. I know that there are people that are like, oh, it's fun and entertaining. I thought it was so dull and so boring. Mm-hmm. I couldn't stand it one bit. But yeah, I love what Peter Jackson brings here. I think that his scope and vision is really awe-inspiring. The 3-hour runtime, it doesn't bother me. Does it feel long? Yes, it absolutely feels long. Does it feel 3 hours long? I would say no. And I think that's one of those cases to where, like you were saying, you love the world building that Jackson presents on screen and the scope that he encapsulates. It's a really awe-inspiring film, and it's a technical marvel. The visual effects are amazing. The score is great. The imagery is stunning. The sound work is impeccable. Like, this film did so well. It got so much critical acclaim. It won 3 Academy Awards for Best Sound Editing, Best Sound Mixing, and Best Visual Effects. And I really love what he was able to bring here. And especially considering that this was the film that he did right after doing The Lord of the Rings. Yeah. I'm sure everyone was like, oh my God, I need to know what Peter Jackson's going to do next. Lord of the Rings was such a success critically and commercially. Obviously, the last film won all the Oscars, including Best Picture. So I think when Peter Jackson announced that he's doing a King Kong movie right after Lord of the Rings, everyone's like, oh my God, this sounds great. This is awesome. Even though we've had multiple King Kong movies at this point, why not let him add his own spin to it? And Jack Black is fantastic in this film. It's a very interesting role for him to tackle because while he invokes some of his comedic elements into it, he's definitely more restrained here. He's not as focused on being the comedic goofball as he would be in something else. And I think it's cool that he was able to work with a director like Peter Jackson. And what I always loved was that Jack Black took some inspiration from Orson Welles and brought it into his character, because you could definitely see that. If you watch any behind-the-scenes documentaries about Orson Welles, you could see that Orson Welles was pretty much similar to how Jack Black is in this movie, where he wants to direct this movie, he wants to bring his vision to life, and he doesn't care really about the safety of his cast and crew. He doesn't care one bit about the safety of anyone. He just wants to do what he can to bring this film to life.
Right.
And it's really impressive, and the entire ensemble knocks out of the park. I love Naomi Watts. She's one of my favorite actors ever, and she's so great here. And the motion capture from Andy Serkis is impeccable. as we already knew that from War of the Rings, and then obviously the years to come, like since, you know, everything he did with Planet of the Apes and Star Wars and everything else, I really love this film, and it's another one that I haven't watched in so long, and I'm definitely due for a rewatch. I cannot believe this movie's almost 20 years old. I didn't see this when it came out. I didn't see this in theaters, but I do remember when this came out and how big of an event it was. It was like, oh, a Christmas release, a big 3-hour epic. I love that now we're in the state where we're getting all these long epics. I know some people are like, why does this movie have to be long? Cinema's back, baby. Listen, if the film is good, and earns that lengthy runtime, then go for it. I don't care. Embrace it. If Scorsese says that Killers of the Flower Moon is almost 4 hours long, so be it. I don't care. Let him make it as long as he wants. He's Scorsese. If the film is good, I trust him for that. But no, I love King Kong 2005. It would definitely be my number 6. I really am due for a rewatch of this. And yeah, it's so good. And even though you know exactly what's coming at the end, you still feel so broken by it.
Yeah, it hurts, bro.
Like, Peter Jackson, he knows what he's doing, and I agree. I would love for him to make another narrative film. The last time he directed a narrative was when he made the Hobbit movies. And, you know, he's been doing good with all these documentaries. I haven't seen They Shall Never Grow Old. I haven't seen that.
So good, Brian.
I heard it's great, but I really loved Get Back. I loved what he brought to that. The footage looked great. The pace of it was great. It was long as fuck, but I don't care. I'm a huge Beatles fan, so I was very happy about that Peter Jackson was able to do whatever he wanted to do with it. Yeah, I love Peter, and like, he's got to come back to make a narrative. I feel like down the road, he'll make another one again. I do feel like it's going to happen again very, very soon. It may take a while, but I think it's going to happen. And when he announces that he's doing another feature, whatever genre he wants to do, I'll be there day one. I will literally be there day one.
Hey, if Francis Ford Coppola can come back with Megalopolis, it's got to happen.
Which just finished filming a couple of days ago.
Is that 2023 or 2024?
I think 2024.
Okay.
I'm so excited. Mm-hmm. Can't wait for that. Cannot wait to see that. So, my number 3, I am going to go with what I believe to be the most serious performance that he's done so far. I'm going to go with Bernie from 2011, directed by Richard Linklater, his second collaboration with the guy. I remember when I first came across this movie, I had no idea what to expect because the trailers made it out to look more comedic than serious. And there's definitely a lot of comedy in this film, for sure. But I really love the approach that Richard Linklater took to bring the character Bernie T to life. So, in case anyone out there doesn't know what this film is about, Bernie T is a mortician, and he becomes friends of this recently widowed woman named Marjorie, who's played incredibly well by the always great Shirley MacLaine. To the point where their relationship is so off-putting. He's like in his 40s and she's in her 80s. So it's like, are they romantically involved? Are they just friends? What have you? And then something happens that leads to somebody dying. And I'm not going to say how it happens, but let's just say that it's an unexpected turn. It goes down directions that I certainly was not anticipating as someone who didn't know this story. It's based on a true story that happened in the 90s. And Jack Black's performance in this is absolutely incredible. He is fantastic. He is, of course, really funny in this movie. There's many great deliveries of comedic timing. That sentence made no sense, but you know, he's so funny in this movie, but he's also really tender, and like, you see this side of him that you hadn't seen from him before. Like, there's moments where he's crying, not for comedy, like he's genuinely crying, and you're like, whoa, where did this come from? Where did this side come from? And really, when him and Richard Linklater work together, it's like peanut butter jelly. They work off each other so great. They've only done 3 movies together so far, and I really do love how this film is able to blend comedy and drama. I always say that blending together comedy and drama is a very difficult thing to accomplish, and I think Richard Linklater is able to do that so beautifully here. And yeah, Jack Black really is incredible. I think he should have been nominated for an Oscar for this. He did receive a Golden Globe nomination, but I think that an Oscar nomination would have been very deserving. This really was a wonderful performance. And I want to shout out a particular scene that always brings so much joy to me, especially considering what had happened in the scene prior. So there's a sequence where something crazy happens. Then it cuts to him performing 76 trombones for the Music Man. And it's like, oh, I love that edit and how it goes from this very intense scene to him just going 76 trombones in the big parade. I love it. It's great. It's so great. And the voice that he does in the movie, Marjorie, you're making it very hard to be your friend. I'm going to come back some other time. It's great. It's great. It's a very goofy character, but that's apparently how the real Bernie Teed was. I love this movie. It's super underrated. When people talk about Jack Black, they never talk about this movie. When people talk about Richard Linklater, they never talk about this movie. It really should be discussed more because it is one of the better Jack Black films, and it's one of Richard Linklater's most underappreciated films for sure. So Bernie is my number three. Are you going to pass, or is this not on your list?
This is not on my list. I actually wanted to watch this past week in anticipation of this podcast. I didn't get the chance to. I'm going to watch it this year, though. Hopefully, maybe I watch it this week, actually. Now that you talked about it, like, I'm probably going to watch it before next week's over.
Yeah.
But I think, yeah, like, comedy and drama is, like, two sides of the same coin. Like, when it's done wonderfully, like, it's the best. And I love hearing that Jack Black, like, really leans into, like, his dramatic in this. And hearing that he has, like, because I don't think I could think of a moment besides Bernie where, like, he had, like, a breakdown of a scene like that, like you were mentioning.
Yeah.
But, like, that, it must... Richard Linklater, like, that must hit hard. So I'm actually excited to see, like, how he's actually, like, using his acting to, like, push that scene forward, and just seeing his sensibilities in that movie. And I would agree, like, I've never heard people really mention this movie in the Richard Linklater conversation when you're talking about his... He has a lot of movies, to be fair. Like, he's done a lot of good stuff. But this should be in conversations more because, yeah, like, I feel like people just don't mention it at all. And I remember when this came out, I think on Twitter, people who did see it, who I was following, were like, you gotta watch this, people aren't talking about this. And then it just kind of like vanished from the conversation. I haven't heard about it probably until this podcast, honestly. So yeah, just that alone leaves credence to the idea that it should be in discussions more when you're talking about Jack Black and Richard Linklater movies. And I'm excited to check it out now, based on what you said. Like, to reiterate, like, I'm really hyped to watch this because... A good Jack Black dramatic role, yeah, give it to me.
Yeah, it's so good. It's so great, and I do hope that down the road more people will talk about it. And hey, if it's one of those underrated films that only, like, certain people talk about, that's okay. I will always love it, and I hope that you enjoy it when you get to watch. I feel like you're going to like it. I don't see a world where you don't at least like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Richard Linklater, I feel like there's not a movie in his arsenal that I don't like, so...
Yeah,
I'm excited.
Absolutely, absolutely. And now we're in our top two. This is going to be very, very fascinating. So what is your second favorite Jack Black film of all time?
I'm not going to build it up. School of Rock. Yeah. So I didn't get a chance to rewatch this, but I've seen this movie 100 times. Another Richard Linklater movie, which I got to be honest, I didn't notice it was Richard Linklater for the longest time, but that's because... When this came out, I wasn't really studying movies like that. But then, like, when I started, like, watching a lot more stuff, I'm like, oh, he did that? But it makes a lot of sense when you think about it because, like you said, him and Jack Black are, like, peanut butter and jelly. It's like De Niro and Scorsese. Like, you just, like, magic happens. But this is the breakout role for Jack Black. I feel like before this he was known, but he wasn't, like the guy. Now, this movie made him, like, the star, and it blends together, talking about Jack Black specifically, like, it blends together all his sensibilities that you expect from Jack Black. You got a little bit of the drama, a little bit. You got the comedy, you got the musicality, you got the charisma. You literally have everything. But what makes this movie really click is, like, his relationship with these students. So, like, I feel like people know the story of School of Rock. I don't want to, like, reiterate the plot, but, like, he's a substitute teacher teaching these kids, and, like, a lot of, like, incredible, incredible comedy, incredible moments come from him interacting with these kids and teaching them. Like, he's doing it for his own selfish reasons at first, But like him teaching these kids how to like play the instruments and like really form this band, and him helping these kids get self-confidence. Like, it's in that regard, I feel like it's a very important movie, honestly, actually, like with the school system and all that. Like, it's very important to teach these kids because confidence is a big thing. And like, Jack Black has this natural charisma where he helps these kids really find themselves at a really young age and really help them like bring out the best out of he brings the best out of these kids. And the parents don't see it at first, but like it all coalesces in that final like teacher's pet scene. Like you got the principal, Joan Cusack, going off. You got the parents having a good time. Everybody's having a good time. And apparently that was filmed in the Staten Island St. George Theater. I had no freaking idea, but like I recently learned it, and I was like, that's a cool bit of history that we could brag about now. It's the perfect movie. I feel like all movies are subjective, obviously, but like I think there are some movies out there, at least to me, which makes this subjective already in this conversation, but like we think of like objectively, like this is a perfect movie, 5-star movie. This is one of them to me. I just feel like it has literally everything you want in a movie. Everything. And I feel like anybody could put on this movie. I would love to find somebody who watches School of Rock and goes, nah, wasn't for me.
I'm sure there is someone like that out there, though.
Yeah. Oh, of course.
I'm sure there is someone out there.
I just can't picture it in my head.
Neither could I. I'll get to it when I get to it.
Yeah, I figured that.
Yeah, my number two is The Holiday. I've talked about this movie so many times on this podcast. It's literally insane. I feel like I've lost count of how many times I've talked about this movie on this show, but we're never going to stop talking about The Holiday because it's just one of the best movies I probably have ever seen. So I'm not a big rom-com guy at all. Rom-coms are very hit or miss for me. I have to really, really love the comedy and the romance to really celebrate its rom-com approach. But I've always liked Nancy Meyers. I've always liked her stamp on screen. I love practically all of her movies. There's not one that I don't like. I have seen all of them, and I have yet to dislike anything that she pumps out, and I'm super excited for what she does next. But The Holiday always goes back and forth with The Parent Trap as my favorite. The Parent Trap I grew up watching all the time when I was a kid. Still love that movie to this day. I don't know what it is about that movie that makes me love it so much still as an adult, but it's just so charming and likable, and Lindsay Lohan is incredible as both roles. And then just Dennis Quaid and Tasha Richardson are both mommy and daddy. Like, they're so freaking gorgeous in the movie. It's great. But The Holiday, I really love how it feels like a conventional rom-com, but it also doesn't feel like your conventional rom-com. Jack Black is amazing as Miles. He brings everything that you love about Jack Black into the role. The music, the comedy, the charisma, all of that, the charm. Like, he brings all of that to this character. And Nancy Meyers had talked about how she wrote this character really specifically for him. She said that about all the characters in the film. She wrote the character of Amanda for Cameron Diaz, the character of Grant for Jude Law, and the character of Iris for Kate Winslet. Which, by the way, I mean, I said this a lot on my Kate Winslet episode, but Kate Winslet really does need to do more comedy. She is so charming and so funny in this movie that she really needs to do more comedy. And I think the pairing of her and Jack Black is just so interesting because, not saying that Jack Black is an ugly-looking guy by any means, but you know, it's not the most conventional pairing him with someone like Kate Winslet. Sure. It's a very unconventional pairing, and I love that. I love that they didn't just automatically pair Kate Winslet with the hot guy. Like, don't get me wrong, I love the whole Cameron Diaz-Jude Law dynamic in the movie, but they're both attractive people. So, you know, it makes sense. Yeah. But the fact that Kate Winslet goes for this guy in Miles, who, you know, may not be the most attractive on the outside, but on the inside, he's so attractive because of how charming he is and how sincere he is and how likable he is. And I love that so much in this movie. And their chemistry is really, really amazing. And I would love for them to work together again down the road. I really feel like it would be very cool to see Kate and Jack work together, especially now in the state of her career. And it's interesting, too, because at the time when this movie came out, Kate Winslet barely did any comedy. She had been known for all these period pieces, but she had just done Eternal Sunshine, which definitely showcased her comedic chops beforehand. But also keep in mind that Kate Winslet at that point was like a 7-time Oscar nominee. And Jack Black, here's Jack Black, you know, acting alongside this high-profile, Oscar-caliber actor. And I'm sure that was intimidating for him, but no, he just vibed really well with her. The boob gray scene is really great. Let's talk about the blockbuster scene. Let's just talk about that for a second. So,
I know you're itching to this.
I will admit that on paper, it may feel uncomfortable. Imagine you're going to a blockbuster, then you just hear this guy singing all these scores for all these movies. My personal favorite moment in that blockbuster was when he grabbed the Graduate DVD, just turns very slowly, "Where have you gone, Joe DiMaggio?" And then just cuts and Dustin Hoffman is there, which the story, but do you know the story behind his cameo in that movie or not?
I have no idea, but I remember when that happened, I was just like, oh, what a coincidence that he's just chilling there.
Yeah, what a coinky thing. So he happened to be going to Blockbuster to rent a movie. And he happened to notice that they were shooting there. So then he decided, oh, I want to be in this scene and everything. So Nancy Myers just said, hey, come along. Join the ride. And yeah, I love it. I love it so much.
That's a cool little story. That's fun.
It is. It's so fun. It's just also funny because, oh, he's talking about The Graduate. And then all of a sudden Dustin Hoffman is there and everything. But yeah, I love it. And I just love how Miles is just so, like, his knowledge of film just, like, it's just so cool watching a movie where you see this guy celebrating film and especially the music that goes into film. And then he expresses, like, the emotion that music brings to it, which I really do love. And also, I think this has one of my favorite Hans Zimmer scores of all time, this movie. The score for this movie slaps. It's actually really, really great. And you would never think that someone like Hans Zimmer would compose a movie like this, but I just love the range that good old Hans brings to his films. I love that so much. Yeah, I love The Holiday. I mean, I could go on and on about this movie till the end of time. I've said my piece numerous times on this podcast about why I love this movie. It's funny, it's quirky, it's charming, it's wholesome. It brings a little tear to my eye. I love the entire cast. I love the pacing. I love the writing. I love the directing. I literally love everything about The Holiday. It's become one of my favorite Christmas movies. It's a quintessential watch. It's also a film that I can honestly watch any time of the year and still enjoy it. Yes, I would prefer to watch it at Christmas because it's set during the holidays, but I could enjoy this movie any time of the year, and it never gets old. And yeah, they really just don't make rom-coms like this anymore, and I really do believe that Nancy Myers is the queen of making the quintessential studio rom-com.
Yeah, you know what? It's funny because I wouldn't even think at first in my own eyes that I'm a big fan of rom-coms, but Forgetting Sarah Marshall is one of my favorite movies of all time. That's a rom-com.
That's so, a great movie.
When rom-coms are, like, at their peak, like, they are some of the best out there. And they did have a long time to shine, like, decades ago. And I think they might be making a little bit of a comeback. I'm not sure. There's a movie with Glenn Powell and Sydney Sweeney they're making. I don't know if it's going to be one of those direct-streaming movies or if they're trying to, like, market it to be, like, a big thing. But and Nancy Myers is – I know she was doing that Netflix movie. But it did. It fell through with Netflix. I don't know if anybody else is picking it up.
Warner Brothers just picked it up.
Cool. But yeah, I think there's an audience for rom-coms. People, there's something, especially this movie. Like when I watched it, I remember I just felt like cozy. I think cozy is the good word for it.
Perfect word for it.
Because like you can literally, it's like a nice toasty fire. Just like throw on some marshmallows and just like sit back and watch these actors do their thing with some really beautiful locations. You got California and you got the other side of the world, and like the house, like Kate Winslet's house is like so cozy. Like I would Airbnb that shit in a hot minute.
Absolutely.
I know like Cameron Diaz stayed there for quite a long time in that movie, but wasn't enough time.
No.
I would have stayed there longer. And I also really like Cameron Diaz's her like occupation in that movie too, and how
it's the coolest job ever.
Like it's like it was really fun, like how they integrated that into the actual movie. Like I from that point, I was like, okay, like I'm down with this. Like,
yeah, and then they have the voiceover guy, Amanda Daniels, does this and does that. It's so good.
No, that's awesome. You don't really see that. It's a great way to like get you endeared to her character too.
It really is, and I just want to say that one of the sexiest line deliveries of all time is when She goes to Graham's house. Her daughter opens the door. She's like, Daddy? And he's like, yes, I am Daddy. You're damn right you are, Graham. You're damn right you are.
I can hear it in my head as you're saying it. I'm like,
oh my God. That's literally peak Jude Law hotness. Like, that might be the most attractive he's ever been in a movie. Jude
Law, how dare he be so attractive?
Seriously. Even when you're playing young Dumbledore, you still find a way of looking sexy. It's not fair.
Yeah. And that was like a year ago.
Yeah, literally. So now it's time to get into our number one favorite Jack Black films of all time. Obviously, mine is the most obvious answer of all time. So your answer, I have no idea what you're going to pick as your number one. So what is your favorite Jack Black film of all time?
Man, I could, if I were, I mentioned Ron Burgundy, Anchorman before. If I can go on top of a mountain, Extremis, I would. We don't have mountains in Staten Island, though, so can't really do that. Don't have really much of anything, but aside from the point, my number one movie, my number one Jack Black movie is Tenacious D and The Pick of Destiny. This movie, I could scream. It's like, this movie is like, how do I even encapsulate? Like, in a way, I feel like I'm also trying to pitch to people who haven't seen it at all, or haven't seen it in a while, why you should go back and watch this. But I think it just, like, I watched it at the perfect time, and like, it continues to have, like, traction for me, where, like, it has Life's Full of Rock. It has everything you want from Jack Black. Well, not really the drama, but it's, like, the perfect Jack Black movie. Like, talking about Jack Black, the perfect Jack Black movie, because it really leans into what he does best with the charisma, the musicality, and the comedy. And the comedy is a little raunchy at times, but what I think this movie is so underrated in my eyes. I feel like people don't talk about this, but the soundtrack for this movie, the music, such bops from right out the gate. Like, the music is memorable, and it's like, if people have never heard Tenacious D, it's like, it's a little bit of a mix of, like, heavy metal, but, like, it's more classical, too. Like, it's not, like, in your face. But it also, Jack Black, like, his lyricism with Kyle Gass, who was, like, his longtime partner for, I think they went to the college together or something. But it's the two of them. It's Kyle Gass and Jack Black. And they really make some incredible music in this movie. And pairing that with some really fun visuals. And the story of this movie, really quick, is that Jack Black, he's an aspiring rock artist. And he is told by Black Sabbath's Dio, rest in peace, to go to California and find his rock partner to become the greatest rock band in the world. But before they do that, they have to find this legendary pick that all the rock legends of rock have used to become, like, these ultra gods, like your Eddie Van Halens and, like, your stuff like that. And they go on this, like, road trip journey to find this pick. And there's, like, there's supernatural elements to it. There's, like, fantastical elements to it. There's just, like, weird, like, physical comedy that you get from, like, your Nacho Libres that, like, you wouldn't expect in this. But again, I think it goes back to, like, everything is tied together by the musicality of this. They get some really fun cameos. I don't want to spoil who he plays in this, people who haven't seen it, but Dave Grohl of Foo Fighters is in this movie in a very integral scene. Man, does he pop off. Like, I didn't realize who he was when I first saw this movie. In 2006. But this movie bombed, by the way. This movie did terrible. So I think if it would have done well, they would have made another one. Because the way they leave it off, it could be another one. It has everything. And, like, I could sing, like, the entire soundtrack. If you gave me the time, Brian. I can just go off and do the entire damn soundtrack of this movie. Without a pitch. And there's no movie out there where I could just sing the entire movie from beginning to end. Not even, like, my favorites, like La La Land. Like, I can't even sing, like, the entire movie there. And I love that movie. But Tenacious D, yeah. It's a rated R musical comedy with great fantastical elements in it. Great practical effects. It's got everything for me, anyway. What you want from a movie, it's got. And that's why it's my numero uno.
Yeah, I saw this when I was in middle school, and I loved it so much, and I haven't gone back to it since. I do remember just being so blown away by what this was. I was like, what the hell is this? Like, we don't see movies like this anymore, which is really disappointing. And, you know, there was a recent interview where Jack Black and Kyle Gass were thinking about making the sequel to The Pick of Destiny. They say that, you know, it could happen. We don't know. And I'd definitely be down for that. And, you know, I would love to see them perform live. It's like high on my list. I would love to see them perform live. I don't know if they're ever going to go back to performing live. I don't know. But if they do, I will literally be there immediately. If they come to New York, New Jersey, I will literally go. If they don't come, if they go to like Philly or Boston, I'll travel to those cities just to see them. I don't care. Like, if I like someone that much, I'm willing to go do it. So, yeah, that's a great pick. That's what I kind of figured your number one was going to be when you put School of Rock at number two. I was like, what else can he put? Jumanji? Like, there's no way. Welcome
to the jungle. No.
The next level. Like, but no, that's a great pick. That's a great, great pick. And obviously, going into my number one, it's the most cliched answer of all time. Number one, my favorite Jack Black film of all time is School of Rock. School of Rock is one of my all-time favorite films. It's in my top 15 films ever made. I've seen this movie so many times that I have lost count. This might be the movie I've watched the most in my life. I watched this on loop when I was a kid, religiously. I mean, like, in the Suffield household, there would be days where I would come home from school and I would just put on School of Rock. I would just, like, watch this non-stop. And then there was a period of my life where I didn't see this movie for, like, a good like 5 to 7 years. There was a period where I just didn't watch this movie for a long period of time. And it wasn't until I was maybe like 16 or 17 to where I watched it again. We watched it one day in school and I was like, man, I forgot how great this movie is. I truly forgot how great it is. And as I get older, my appreciation for it skyrockets. It's just that good of a film to me. Mm-hmm. It's not the best Richard Linklater film, but it's my personal favorite thing that he's ever directed. It's the one that I've seen the most. Obviously, I'm a huge admirer of Boyhood. I loved the Before trilogy. Days of Confused, yep. I loved. But I can't tell you a film from his filmography that I've watched more than School of Rock. I could quote this movie nonstop. Jack Black's performance is absolutely incredible. It's one of the all-time great comedic performances on screen. He should have been nominated for an Oscar for this. I brought up before how he should have been nominated for Bernie. This he should have gotten nominated for. And, you know, had he gotten nominated, it could have been a pretty great Best Actor lineup. Now, Sean Penn, who I vocalized on air that I'm not the hugest fan of, I do like a lot of the movies that he's in, but I never walk out of a movie being like, oh my God, Sean Penn is great. Fast Times is my favorite thing that he's ever done. I love that, and I love Mystic River. But the fact that he was also up against Bill Murray for Lost in Translation. He was up against Johnny Depp for the first Pirates movie. I forgot who else got nominated.
I forgot Johnny Depp was nominated for Pirates.
See, a lot of people do forget that. That's like one of the other coolest Oscar. Like, say what you want about Johnny Depp now. We don't have to get into what's going on in his personal life. But that performance being an Oscar-nominated performance is absolutely bonkers to me. And
2003, mind you.
2003. And based on a theme park character ride.
Yeah.
Like, the fact that it's based on a friggin' theme park ride and it got an Oscar nomination. I mean, it's a great performance. It's actually a really great performance. So, but Jack Black is Dewey Finn. Exactly. Jack Black as Dewey Finn is a role that was tailor-made for him. And not only does Richard Linklater direct the hell out of this, the screenplay by the real Ned Schneebly himself, Mike White, is amazing. It's amazing. And it's funny, too, because when the recent season of The White Lotus came out, a lot of people were like, wait a minute. Ned Schneebly created this? He wrote it and directed it? I am shocked. Like, the amount of people that were, like, shocked to find out. I even told my my sister about that. I was like, oh, you know Ned Schneebly from School of Rock? And she's like, yeah. And I'm like, oh, he created The White Lotus. What? Oh, man. Just crazy. It's really crazy the career that he's had, too. I mean,
he wrote Nacho Libre, too.
he wrote Nacho Libre as well. Yeah. And School of Rock. The chemistry between Jack Black and all the students is amazing. And if that didn't work, the whole movie would not have worked. But I also like how you brought up how the character of Dewey Finn pretended to be Ned Schneebly just to get this money because his band had dropped him. He had to pay rent and he was out of luck. He had no idea what to do. And then he happened to be home and then he gets this call that was really for Ned Schneebly. And then he decides to impersonate him. Hello, this is Ned Schneebly. And he decides to go to the school, pretend to be the sub. And then at first he's just in it for the money. But then he realizes that these kids have potential. You know, he just stumbles across them in a music class one day. And then he's like, I'm going to teach you guys how to play, how to be a group. And that cockiness really goes away quickly because he sees the potential with these kids. He feels a connection with these kids. And it's beautiful. It's really, really great. And that's what makes this film so charming. It's so likable. It's just one of the most wholesome movies that I've ever seen. It's my literal go-to comfort movie. Whenever I feel down, I put on School of Rock because of how much I love it so much. And yeah, Jack Black should have been nominated for an Oscar for this performance. It was a legit incredible performance. Like, it was a great comedic performance, but on its own, it was a great performance. The stuff that he did in this movie, he really knocked it out of the park. And the supporting cast too, Joan Cusack, Mike White, Sarah Silverman, all the students were great. I love Joan Cusack in this movie as Rosalind Mullins. She is so, so good in this film. She's very underrated, and she hasn't acted in years. It's been a long time since she's been acting in anything, right. But I really love her charm and in this film, and I love the banter between the two of them, especially when they go to the bar, and then he plays a song by Stevie Nicks, and they start singing and everything. It's so, so great because then you see this firecracker side of her that she had been hiding throughout the whole movie because you think that she's just this stern principal. But really, there's something deep inside of her that now she's unleashing when she's around Dewey. And it's so, so good. And one of my favorite things about that entire sequence is after he goes to the jukebox, he turns around and then he spins around, then does this like butterfly thing, like moves around like this when he's doing it. It's so funny. The comedic timing here is impeccable, and I'm still shocked that Richard Linklater even directed a movie like this, because you look at everything else that guy has made, you would never have pictured that the same guy who made the Before trilogy and Boyhood and Dazed and Confused made School of Rock. You would never have pictured that. And one thing that Richard Linklater does so well with all of his movies are the needle drops. The 80s music used in this movie is great. They have great songs from practically all the 80s artists that I grew up loving when my dad showed me all these 80s artists and got me into 80s music. Like, if you're a classic rock geek, this is the movie for you. If you're a heavy metal rock guy, this is the movie for you. And also, like you were saying, John, it's hard to not like this movie. It just leaves such a big smile on your face, and you just feel so happy when you watch it, and you love the energy that is brought throughout it and the charisma and the charm. It's so fast-paced. It doesn't drag at all. The movie's like an hour and 40 minutes. It feels like it's an hour and 15 minutes. It goes by so quickly. I do like how you brought up the whole Staten Island fact. Some of this movie was also shot in New Jersey, which is crazy, in the town next to where I live. So I find that to be really, really fascinating. Like, sequences where they're driving in the streets and then he's singing the immigrant song in the car, which I will tell you, as a kid, that scene made me laugh. But like, when he just turns around and looks at the kids and does that creepy, scary face, it kind of haunted me for a little bit of time when I was a kid. But I love the movie, and I cannot believe that it's 20 years old. I can't believe it's that old.
Yeah. That's like, crazy.
I don't understand how...
Time don't make sense, man.
I don't understand how it's this old. It's the same age as Lord of the Rings Return of the King. Oh my god. Like, two of the literal best movies of all time came out in 2003. School of Rock and Return of the King. Man, I mean, School of Rock really is a game changer. It's so good. And seriously, Jack Black's comedic timing is really, really great. Did I say that right, Schneebly? Actually, it's Schneebly. And then he just quotes the song. Is that a song? No, I don't think so. No, definitely not. It's great. Ooh. I love it. And let me ask you this. What would you say is your favorite line from the movie, if you remember any quotes from the movie?
I gotta be honest, I can't really remember any quotes off the top of my head right now. Because the last time I watched this was like about a year ago. But there's a line, I can't remember it. There's a line with Joan Cusack when she sees that one dude during the Battle of the Bands with the low-cut shirt. That's like one of my favorite moments. I forget what actually is said, though. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's like, that was a part where I was like, yeah. That's like just like a moment that I didn't think about much prior to my last rewatch, but that was like, oh, that's like a top moment for me, is like that moment with Joan Cusack.
Oh, it's and so
this
good.
This random rock dude. But I do agree that, like, I feel like this is a good movie to, like, if you want to get into the rock genre, you watch this movie. And, like, it's almost, like, reminds me of, like an adjacent, not a movie, but a video game, Guitar Hero. Like, a great way to, like, really get yourself and dip yourself into this genre. Because, like, then from there, you, like, open the floodgates of, like, what you want to listen to.
It's just so impressive how, like, impactful this movie has been to a lot of people, especially people of our generation. And, you know, this is one of those movies that a lot of people love, and rightfully so. And I'm really glad that it's a critical success, it was a financial success, and it's garnered this huge following over the last 20 years. And I love it. I really do love it to pieces. I love it so much. And, you know, also, we're going to really get into the honorable mentions, and we're going to talk about some of the films actor, that he has coming Kevin out. Clark. But before we do that, let's recap our list from 5 to 1. So, John, what is your list?
So, my list is number 5, The Holiday. Number 4, Nacho Libre. Number 3, 2005, King Kong. Number 2, School of Rock. And number 1, Tenacious D and The Pick of Destiny.
And to recap my list, coming in number 5 is Tropic Thunder, number 4, Kung Fu Panda, number 3, Bernie, number 2, The Holiday, and number 1, School of Rock. So that is it with our list, so let's talk about some of the films that didn't make the cut. So what are some films that you want to give a shout-out to?
Shark Tale. No, I'm kidding, actually. one movie, High Fidelity is up there. I remember the first time I watched High Fidelity was one of the, like, 2020 was a year where I watched so many freaking movies. And that was one of the ones that left a real big mark on me at the time, and I actually kind of want to rewatch it. Kung Fu Panda's up there too. Tropic Thunder, like a lot of those, like the ones you hit, like I would definitely put up there. And then another one that I feel like he's not in it much, but one I would put is Anchorman. But I feel like it's a movie full of characters that are like in little tiny roles, and he's one of them. But so like it counts to me that Anchorman could be up there.
Yeah, for me, I am going to say that some of the honorable mentions are obviously Tenacious D, King Kong, like I brought up. I love his performance in Anchorman, so I'll give a shout out to that. And that's also one of my favorite comedies of all time. I love it so much. Hey, Pods Baxter! Oh my god, it's so good. It's so great. Yeah. I love it so much. While I didn't love the movie, I want to give a shout-out to one of his other series performances. It was a film from Noah Baumbach called Margot at the Wedding, which I just watched very recently for the first time. It was okay. It was fine. Kind of lower-tier Baumbach for me. But Jack was really good in it, and I think he had great back-and-forth with Nicole Kidman and Jennifer Jason Leigh. It's definitely one you should check out if you want to see a more vulnerable side of Jack Black. But not a massive winner in my book, but in terms of his performances, he really does elevate that film for sure. I love his cameo in Walk Hard. He plays Paul McCartney. I think that's a great cameo.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I've always loved that cameo for sure. Can we please talk about how great he is in The Muppets?
Man, I forgot. This is sad. I forget his role in The Muppets. The 2011 movie, right? I have to watch that again.
Yeah,
Oh wait, he's the one who gets kidnapped.
No, yeah.
I remember.
Yeah, he's so great. Great role. One of my favorite deliveries is just when they kidnap him and he opens the trailer door, he's like, "I told you, man, I'm too busy putting it on my balls." Just out of context, it's so good. Oh, hey, animal. What are you doing here? Acting natural. It's so good. That's become one of my all-time favorite movies, too. I think that's, like,
top. That is a great movie.
You know how recently we had Magic Mike's Last Dance came out? That was a Save the Theater movie. The entire time I was watching that movie, I thought of The Muppets, because that's the truly best Save the Theater movie.
Yes. Am I a man or am I a Muppet?
Oh my god, so good.
It's the question.
Yeah, I think we also, all really, ask ourselves that question. Movie. What?
I remember another movie I wanted to mention really quick. Be Kind Rewind is a movie that I see nobody talk about.
I've never seen that. I've never Ooh. Seen that movie.
Do you know the basic premise of Be Kind Rewind?
I do.
Or have you heard? It's worth it. It's not a great movie, but it's worth it to see Jack Black recreate scenes of classic movies.
Yeah.
And, like, seeing him and Mos Def, like, going into that. And, like, that's where a lot of the creativity comes in
for
that movie.
Yeah, I do want to check that out. I like the first Goosebumps quite a lot. I think he's really great as R.L. Stine. And I also think the voice that he brings to playing Slappy is really, really strong as well. That movie was way better than it had any right to be. And I haven't seen the sequel. The only reason why I didn't see it was because he wasn't in it and it wasn't the same people behind the film. So I'm like, oh, I'll pass on that one. But I do really enjoy that first one. And I like the Jumanji movies. I think he's great in both of them. I genuinely believe that he is great in
both of them. He's the best part of those movies, probably.
I agree. He is the best part of those movies for sure. He's so good at playing a teenage girl in the first one, and then the second one, he plays Fridge. And one of my favorite deliveries of any line is when they first go back into the game in the next level, and then they're like, Fridge? And he's like, yes, I'm Fridge, goddammit! It's so good. I love it so much. I love it. Oh, and Apollo 10 and a half. Even though he's not physically in it, he's just narrating it. I love that movie. That was one of my favorite movies of last year.
He makes it very easy to watch through his narration. You just want to hear him talk.
He does.
To be honest.
And you know, narration is a very hard thing to master in films, but he does it so naturally. It's so great. Like, I would love to just
telling the story. Like,
yeah, I would love to just listen to an audiobook of him saying stuff. Like, I would love it.
Yeah. He should go into the audiobook medium.
I feel like he definitely should. He absolutely should. And now to talk about some of the films he has coming out. So there's three that are listed. First up, obviously, the Super Mario Brothers movie, which is coming out in theaters this week. Then we have Kung Fu Panda 4, which is scheduled to come out next summer. Next March, actually. So it's coming out in less than a year. And then we have the Borderlands movie, which is directed by Eli Roth and co-written by Craig Mason, who has just come off the success of The Last of Us and Chernobyl. So to talk about these movies for me, I'll start off with the Mario Brothers movie. So with the Super Mario Brothers movie, I'm going in with very low expectations. While it looks visually stunning, it looks amazing to look at. I'm not super high. I don't know. I don't really get excited for American animations like I used to. I get more excited for international animations because I feel like a lot of American animations follow the same trope. Now, that's not to say that this movie won't be good. I don't know how this movie's going to pan out. I'm still not very high on the fact that Chris Pratt is voicing Mario. I'm not very high on that. But the entire ensemble surrounding him, it's like everyone is perfectly cast. Like, Jack Black is the perfect person to voice Bowser. And from the trailers that we've gotten, I like that Jack Black is adding his own spin to the voice. But he's also injecting his own voice. Like, Charlie Day's Luigi is perfect casting. Anya Taylor-Joy is Peach. I mean, I'm sure she's not going to do much with her voice, but that's good casting. Seth Rogen is Donkey Kong. Keegan-Michael Key is Toad. Like, everything is there except for the star of the movie. And I don't hate Chris Pratt. I just don't like that he's being cast and everything. And that's a different discussion for another time. But I'm really hoping that this Mario Brothers movie is a fun time. I'm really hoping that it's entertaining. It could be like the Lego movie where we go in expecting it to be a a poop fest, and then it ends up being like one of the best anime films ever. I don't think that's going to be the case with this movie. I'm not really super high on Illumination to begin with, but I'm hopeful. I'm very, very hopeful with this movie for sure. Kung Fu Panda 4, I was always in the camp to where Kung Fu Panda 3 felt like a great ending to that story. I always thought that that was it. Like, a great trilogy right then and there. But if they have a really good story with this fourth one, it could be really solid. If the animation is in the same vein as what they just did with Puss in Boots, I'm there right away. And I feel like now with the high that DreamWorks has been on with Puss in Boots, I really feel like this could be another winner for them. I remain hopeful. I'm not too sure who's directing it. I'm going to look that up right now as we speak. It says that I believe the director who directed the last two is going to be... Actually, no, she's not directing. There's no confirmation on who's directing it. All it says is that the film's coming out on March 8th, 2024. So hopefully whoever directs it does a great job. And then the Borderlands movie. I've never played Borderlands in my life. I don't really know much of the source material behind it, but I do love the cast of this movie. It's just the weirdest casting ever. So he's going to be voicing Claptrap, which I think probably works best for him. I think that's probably a great casting right then and there. But this cast is so fascinating. So you have not only Jack Black, but you have Kevin Hart. You have Cate Blanchett. And you have, fresh off her Oscar win, Jamie Lee Curtis. And I'm not really high on Eli Roth. I've never really liked him really at all. He's an acquired taste for sure. But him working with Jack Black again is really cool. I did enjoy The House with a Clock in Its Walls or whatever the hell it was called. That long fucking title. But and Jack was really great in it. And again, like, I love that he's worked with both Cates. I love that he's worked with both Winslet and Blanchett. I think that's really, really great that he's been able to work with both of them. But I'll keep my expectations low for Borderlands. I really love what Craig Mason has done with Chernobyl and The Last of Us. I'm hoping that this is akin to some of that writing and not the writing that he did for, like, superhero movie or The Hangover 3 or Scary Movie 5 or what have you. But yeah, I'm definitely interested in all these movies, but I'm keeping my expectations low for each of them. So what are your thoughts on these three movies coming out for Jack Black?
I'm not gonna lie, Super Mario Brothers, I agree with everything you said. Having said that, I'm very excited to watch it. And I'm not Illumination, like, I could, like, scoff at them because, like, I'm not a big fan of the Minion movies or, like, Despicable Me 1 and 2 I actually really like, but I haven't seen the third one, to be honest.
You're not missing much with the third one. You're not missing much.
Good to know. visually, though, like, Mario Brothers looks, like, impeccable. It looks like Nintendo was, like riding, like, the coattails the whole way to make sure they were doing it the right way. Like, they're showing a little bit too much, I think, in these recent trailers and TV spots, but it looks like they're doing a lot with, like, just, like, the visual medium of, like, showing, like, what you remember from playing the old-school Super Mario games, maybe even some of the newer ones. I'm sure, like, there's going to be, like, references to all the history of Super Mario from 1985 to now with the most recent game in Odyssey, which is the one where you wear, like, a little hat, you throw a hat at people, and you could become that thing. But I'm excited for it, honestly. I think it's going to be a big hit. It might be one of the biggest hits of the year. I would put money on, like, top five for like, the whole year when it comes to, like, being, like, I just feel like it has everything. Like, adults are going to watch it. Kids are going to watch it. Whole family's going to go see this. And if it's, like, it doesn't have to be great, but if it's, like, if it's just, like, or if it's good enough, it's gonna wash April. It's going to be, like, in the top five box office the whole month until Guardians 3 comes out in the beginning of May. But yeah, I'm excited because I've played a lot of Mario, but I do think the story will have a lot to be desired. And if this movie does well, maybe hopefully we'll get, like, they'll be able to do something more interesting with another one. But I'm excited for that. Kung Fu Panda 4, I don't really have any expectations for right now. I think it's because I need to see, like, something. I need to see something first before I'm like, okay. Like, write me to, like, eh. Or, yeah, or, But I do agree. If it's, like, in the same style of Puss in Boots where they're leading into, I think Spider-Verse really changed the game for the animated medium right now.
And absolutely.
I think, like, for the better, honestly. If they, because I think Kung Fu Panda, especially, I wouldn't think for it for Puss in Boots, but after seeing the movie, it makes a lot more sense. But just like thinking on a conceptual level before seeing anything at all yet, I think it makes more sense to do Kung Fu Panda with Spider-Verse animation, because the action, I can just picture the action sequences, like, oof. The potential is there, for sure. I do wonder about the story, though, because I think they ended it, again, like a Toy Story thing, like, it ended well in the third movie, so, like, why do more? But, yeah, if they have a good story to tell, it's been a few years, maybe they do have something cool to tell. Sure, down for it. And March, I think, is a good release date for that, because I don't know if it's going to be as crowded as this March was, because this March was, holy cow, every week was just, like, something coming mm-hmm. out. Mm-hmm. But that's a good month for it, because I think, like, you're not setting too big of expectations of, like, it's a March release, big movie, but not, like, a summer movie, and it might do well with family crowds in that month. And then Borderlands, I'm kind of with you, like, Eli Roth, I could take or I can give, like, I like some of his stuff, but, like, the most recent one I watched was the Cannibal movie. I did not like that. It was kind of stupid. but he's also making that Thanksgiving. He's making the theatrical version of that Thanksgiving short from the Grindhouse movie. And I'm actually kind of low-key excited for that. I think it could be fun if it, like, keeps that tone. I didn't play Borderlands either. I have friends who have played it love the series and love the characters. It's kind of like when you were talking about it, like, what it could set for expectations with, like, the cast and stuff. I think it might be, at least how I'm thinking of it right now, it might be, we haven't seen anything from it, but this is just, like, how I'm viewing it from what we have seen from behind-the-scenes footage, which is, like, there was a Game Awards where they showed behind-the-scenes with Kevin Hart, I think, like, a couple years back. This movie's been, like, in production forever, it feels like. But right now, I feel like it might be, like, Tomb Raider 2018, where, for me, the movie is, like, it's all right. It's fine. But I love Alicia Vikander in it. Like, the cast mm-hmm. is Dominic West. The cast is great in that. So what I think, it might be like a fine movie with a great cast. Like, with that cast like that, you can't really go wrong.
Yeah.
But I feel like they're going to be doing a lot of heavy lifting for a subpar story. But Craig Mazin, like, he's done some good stuff too. So I don't know. I think it might, this is, a lot of this is going to be on Eli Roth's directing in terms of how good, like, for the quality of the actual overall movie. But I think everybody else surrounding Eli Roth is going to help elevate it above what it probably would normally be a movie.
I agree. And, you know, funny enough, when you talk about how this March was set, get ready for this next March's lineup. So before we end the episode, I have to go through it. Okay.
Again?
Okay, here we go. March 1st. This is very quick. March 1st, The Fall Guy, directed by David Leitch and starring Ryan Gosling, Emily Blunt, Aaron Taylor Johnson, Winston Duke, Stephanie Hsu, and Hannah Waddingham.
Yeah, this could be good.
Elio, the new Pixar movie, which is not in relation to Elio from Call Me By Your Name, unfortunately. March 8th, Kung Fu Panda 4, and A Quiet Place Day 1.
Oh, I forgot about that.
March 15th, the untitled Godzilla vs. Kong sequel.
Yeah.
March 22nd, Snow White, starring my wonderful wife, Rachel Zegler. And then March 29th, which, get ready, John, March 29th is definitely going to be an anticipated week for both of us, because there's one film involving someone called Spider-Man coming out that week, because Beyond the Spider-Verse comes out that week, March 29th, 2024.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, my
God. And then my most anticipated film of 2024, Mickey 17, which is Bong Joon-ho's first film since Parasite.
Shit.
Yeah.
Stacked them up.
Good. Let's
not,
make
like,
my...
Not big IPs, but like just in terms of projects, yeah.
Good. Let's keep my birthday month very stacked with cinema. Let's keep that happening. March used to be
March
such
is a good month.
Yeah, March has been... March used to be such a bland month for movies, and now it's like getting much better. So... having John Wick Chapter 4 come out on your birthday month was already a massive win in my book. So I'm glad that mm-hmm. Bong Joon-ho's next movie is going to be coming out in March. Oh my God, I can't wait. But, you know, to close out our thoughts on Jack Black, we love him. He's so loved by so many people across the world. There's nobody like him. The charm, the charisma, the energy, the humor, all of that, the talent. Jack Black is his own person, and no one could ever replicate what he's brought to screen, to music, to everything. I've loved him my whole life, and I will always be a fan of him until he decides to step down and retire from acting, music, what have you. I will always be a fan of Jack Black. So what are your final thoughts on this wonderful man?
I echo everything you said. I'm just like, I'm fascinated by how he seemingly keeps in touch with his inner child and continually finds ways to reinvent himself and stay in touch with new generations. Like, even like going back to Super Mario Brothers, like, even if we don't really love the movie, I think a lot of I already know a lot of kids are going to really like love this. And I feel like a lot of kids are going to grow up with this movie and hearing Jack Black as Bowser for years to come. And like between this and the Goosebumps movies and like Jumanji, like, yeah, like he finds ways to stay, like, I want to say relevant, cause it sounds like, I feel like it's not the right word for it, but like, he seems like a guy who knows what he's doing when it comes to his career. And he's choosing interesting projects, which I feel like isn't always the case for a lot of actors, but like he finds roles that really like test him. And like, I feel like he just finds ways to like be really interesting as an actor. And I'm always excited by what he's going to do next. I hope to see a lot more. He's doing some really cool stuff on the animated side, but I want to see more of what he's doing on the live action side too. I hope he has a lot more drama ahead of him. I would like to hope that Tenacious D sequel is on the way at some point. But he has a very versatile career. He's super charismatic. I love the dude. Again, in touch with his inner child, and I hope that never changes, because like, that's what makes him special. And like, he's already cemented himself in history as like one of those 21st century actors that like, I feel like you see, like, my grandparents would know who, like, you could talk, like, anybody, you could, like, anybody, like, who's that? Oh, it's Jack Black. He's one of those dudes now. And I'm grateful for the work he's done, and I'm very excited for the work that is yet to come.
Absolutely, absolutely. John, it has been such an honor having you on the show today. Thank you so much for coming on with me today to talk about Jack Black.
Of course, man. This has been great. I look forward to whatever we talk about next. This has been a lot of fun.
Absolutely, absolutely. So where could the people find you online?
You can pretty much find me anywhere. I'll start with YouTube. YouTube is Mothman Jones. It's basically my last name minus the E-O, Man Jones. And I'm on every social media platform, Twitter, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. I forget. There's so many of them now. Like, my mind just goes blank. But yeah, you can find me at Mothman Jones or my first and last name, John Maffio. I talk about movies. I talk about pretty much everything, too. So come find me there.
And you guys can follow me on all social medias at Brian Suffield. You guys can subscribe to the show on any podcast platform of your choice. We have a Twitter and Instagram, so you guys can stay up to date with what's to come. We have a lot of great episodes coming your way, lots of great guests. So guys, stay tuned for that. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. Let us know your favorite film starring Jack Black. I would really be curious to hear your guys' list. Thank you guys so much once again for listening, and I will see you guys for the very next episode of Film Fragments. Take care, everybody.